Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in East Lansing, Michigan, and earned a BA in telecommunications from Michigan State University, a Master's of Divinity from Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary, and a doctorate in social ethics from Boston University. Since 2005, he's been the president of Adrian College, which was founded in 1859 and is a private liberal arts college with 1,800 students. The author of Crisis in Higher Education, A Plan to Save Small Liberal Arts Colleges in America. His name, Dr. Jeff Docking. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, the 17th president of Adrian College. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Oh, Jack, thank you for having me. You know, I looked at your guest list of previous interviews. I hope I'm worthy of being on your show. You've had a who's who of American history on your show, and it's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, sure. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm a Michigan born and bred kid. When I was 7 years old, my dad came home from work one day and told my older sister, younger brother, and I were going to move to Spartan Village up on the campus of Michigan State. And he was going to finish his PhD. So really moved up to Michigan State and never left East Lansing until after college. My mom was a stay-at-home mom where I really learned the importance of having two engaged parents. My dad was ultimately the superintendent of schools in East Lansing, ultimately became the superintendent of Bloomfield Hill Schools. And so a real background in education in my family, but maybe even more importantly, a background in the importance of family and how important it is to be unconditionally loved from the time you're in diapers on.
Following up on that, what's the biggest thing you learned from mom and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Yeah, so I'll start with my dad. I think that what I learned from him is that persistence is really the name of the game to be successful. You know, I think that he and I both always felt like there was somebody out there smarter. There was somebody out there who maybe had more preparation, maybe someone better looking. But if you stayed with it, if you persevered, if you put one foot in front of the other, the good things would happen. And so he taught me that. He never gave up on that. And I think to this day, really likes to continue to learn and move forward. My mother, what I learned is that having someone there at home when you get home from school, if you skin your knee, you want your mom to hold you tight, to set you straight when you've screwed up, and to pat you on the back when you've done well. And so both of them really taught me what the value of family is to get a good start in this life.
As a youngster, you had some phenomenal experiences with the Spartans.
I did.
What were they, and what did they teach? What did those experiences teach you?
Well, I could tell you a lot of things about living on the, you know, the borders of the Red Cedar River up there in East Lansing, but I think the one that really sticks out to me is I was embraced by the Michigan State hockey team as a young boy to be their stick boy, and Emil Bissoni, the legendary coach up there, allowed me to go on trips with the team from time to time and to stand on the bench during games and to sort of learn how the world works through a bunch of guys that were older than me at Michigan State. And I think it was really then that I had this sort of green blood running through my system and just loved the university, loved the people up there, and really learned about life hanging around that hockey team in probably good ways and some ways that maybe I can't talk about on the air, but nevertheless, real life.
You earned a BA in telecommunications from Michigan State University, and then you went and you spent 3 years in the seminary. Talk about that chapter in your life.
Certainly. So I was one of these young people in college who really had no idea what they wanted to do with their life. And when I look back on my years at Michigan State, I start counting five different majors, if you can count no preference as a major. And I decided late in my tenure that I would go into broadcast journalism, something that's probably close to your heart, Jack. And did it for a year when I got out of college and realized relatively quickly that I really wasn't all that good at it. And I really had trouble finding deep meaning in it for me. I felt like I needed to find something that was more spiritually renewing, something that allowed me to do a deeper dive into myself. And so I entered the seminary in 1984 and decided that I would look at life theologically for a few years. I would try to understand God and his relationship with us on this earth. And so did that, never intending necessarily to be a minister in a local church, but really did it as a way to grow and to learn more about myself and in the career that I wanted to explore.
How was it, Dr. Docking, you chose education as your mission, your vocation in life?
Well, Jack, when I was going through seminary, I was reading a lot of different authors, one of the authors that really made a lot of sense to me was Martin Luther King. I was quite taken with his emphasis on trying to solve our problems nonviolently, of talking instead of shooting. And so I really grew in my love for reading King and learning all that I could about his philosophy and theology. So I went to Boston University, where King got his PhD. His archives are still out there, from essentially the Montgomery bus boycott to the Great March on Washington. And really immersed myself in King and planned on teaching ethics. But the year that I got out, which was 1994, I think there were 3 ethics jobs open in America as I scoured the want ads, which we actually used to have back then, you may remember, and realized I wasn't going to get a job teaching. There was just too much competition. And so I went into administration and just got very, very lucky that a few people said to me, if you'll stick around and do a good job, I'll give you an opportunity to, you know, have a seat at the table and maybe be a college president one day. And it was really just good fortune on my part.
From 97 through 2005, you worked for Washington and Jefferson College. What's the biggest thing that 9-year chapter taught you, Doctor?
Yeah, well, that was really my first exposure to small liberal arts colleges in America. And a lot of people don't know about these colleges, but there's about 650 that are considered national colleges. Many people think Williams is one of the best, but in Michigan it would be Albion and Hope and Calvin and Alma and all of that. These are all just wonderful schools. And the reason people don't know about them, Jack, is because about 90% of students who, when they graduate from high school, just go on to the big publics, which is great. That serves the need of a lot of those folks. Like I said, Michigan State was great for me. But what I learned through that era is that a lot of kids need small classes. They need personal interaction. They need a professor who knows them by name. They need somebody to pull them aside if they try to skip class to say, hey, where were you yesterday? I need you in class. And so I think that what I learned is that there's really 2 different ways to educate in America. One is the big schools that, as I said, do a good job. But another are these small privates that are just beautiful institutions and have served the needs of America for hundreds and hundreds of years.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, and in 2005 he became the president of Adrian College. When we come back, we'll ask him how that came to be. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul, and we're with Dr. Jeff Docking. Doctor, 2005, what drew you to Adrian College, and how did it come to be?
Sure. Well, I was living just south of Pittsburgh. I love Pittsburgh. My wife and I had 4 kids that were all raised Steelers fans and Penguins fans, and I thought I would probably stay in and around Pittsburgh. But it was time for me to move on. I was the assistant to the president at Washington and Jefferson College, so I really applied everywhere around the world, which, by the way, I think is a good lesson for young people, is to be portable. You know, the world is your oyster when you can go anywhere. But I applied for jobs in Idaho and Pennsylvania and in Mexico. But I applied for a job in Michigan in a little town called Adrian that I had never been to in my life, even though I was raised in East Lansing, and met with the search committee and did the on-campus interview and brought my wife along and at one point brought my children along. And Jack, you know, the thing that struck me about Adrian was really twofold. One was upside potential. This was a school that I thought really had the opportunity to do great things in the years ahead and had just not perhaps taken advantage of all of the jewels in its crown to do great things. And the second thing that drew me to it was that I realized in coming back here, having been on the east side of the country for many years, that there's a love in the Midwest for people. There is a patience for people. There's an openness to people. And there's a sense of genuineness that I've really longed to get back to. And so both of those things really drew me back to Adrian.
Paint for us a picture of Adrian College in 2005.
Yeah, so I think Adrian, like many small colleges, both then and especially now, Jack, because small colleges are really struggling in this country, was really in bad shape. They had gotten down to about 840 students the first year that I was there. They were hemorrhaging money at about $1.5 million. There were a whole lot of dandelions on campus, some leaky roofs, and really, I think, honestly, morale was quite low. And yet, there were enough students there that I thought really cared about the place and wanted to be there. And most importantly, there was a faculty there that was there because they wanted to do great things with young people. And, you know, tenured faculty are tough to get rid of. And if I would have looked at that situation and seen that we had a bunch of burned-out faculty that shouldn't be teaching anymore, I wouldn't have taken the job. Because you can change buildings and you can add new majors and you can add sports teams and you can beautify the grounds, but you can't get rid of faculty that want to stick around once they have tenure. But with the faculty, I found exactly the opposite. These were people that were not making the money that they deserved at the time, and they were not really given the resources they need to learn and grow in their profession. And so I thought, if I can provide this to the faculty and do all these other things that are not as difficult, this place can really zoom. And so that's why I took the job.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking. If you want to learn more, www.adrian.edu. Like the wife of Rocky, Adrian? Adrian College was founded in 1859 and is a private liberal arts college with 1,800 students. Doctor, if you would, talk to us about the major challenges of small colleges today and really all colleges and universities.
Yeah, the major challenge is enrollment. You know, especially these small private liberal arts colleges are really enrollment driven. There's only about 50 or 60 colleges in this country that have over $500 million in the bank in their endowment, which would give them the security they need to move forward. And the average small private liberal arts college has about $30 million in endowment. Of course, you only take about 5% of that a year to pay your bills, and so you've got to be bringing in kids. And, you know, the price of college has really drummed many young people out of the regiment. And even families that want to send their kids to private colleges or students that say, I need that small environment, I need to know my professors, I want to be involved outside the classroom, they look at the price tag and they say, I can't do it. And that's not right. And so we need to think about college in the future in some very different ways. Namely, how do we offer more without raising the price tag? And as you know from other guests that you've had on your show, that's on us. Now, I will also say, though, that the market drives some of it, Jack. And even though there's been an arms race in higher education to build bigger and better facilities, much of this is driven by young people that are not willing just to come to college with an alarm clock, a couple of pairs of jeans, and their books. They want to come with their workout gear and their horse and be on the equestrian team and be in beautiful fitness rooms and be able to eat 24/7. So if you don't provide some of these things, they vote with their feet. And so it's really a balancing act to figure out what students need and want and what we can offer and afford to do.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, the author of Crisis in Higher Education, a plan to save small liberal arts colleges in America. Doctor, when you joined in 2005 as president of Adrian, you had 840 students. 13 years later, you've got 1,800. What's the magic?
You know, I think the magic is multifold. There's not a silver bullet, Jack, but part of the magic for us was devising a plan and sticking to that plan, having a plan that really has measurable results, much like a business, and requires accountability on the part of the people who are executing that plan. So I went to my first trustee meeting in 05, and I said, this is how we're going to grow and grow quickly. And we spent a lot of money. In fact, I told the trustees, this plan is not cheap. It's $30 million. And so we spent $30 million fairly quickly. But each one of the investments that we made on campus, things like ice arenas and for hockey players and figure skaters and band uniforms for kids that want to play in a marching band and lacrosse sticks for kids that want to play lacrosse, and on and on and on, had very, very measurable results. So that was part of it. But another part of it, I think, was really reclaiming our roots. I worry about both private liberal arts colleges, and small and large, that do not claim their Christian roots, do not build their college on a set of values, do not say to students, college is not a time to run from the church. It's a time to embrace spirituality and learn about things better than yourself, to identify those bedrock values that ultimately will lead to their decisions, which will lead to their results, which will lead to their success. And so all of these things were in mind as we decided, this is who we are, and this is who we want to be in the future. And I think parents and families are really ready for that right now. The other thing that I'll mention, Jack, and this may be just a touch controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway because I think it needs said. I think the colleges need to offer a balanced education to young people. And if they're going to hear the liberal point of view, these young people ought to be able to hear the conservative point of view as well. And then they get to decide. And this bit going on right now where, you know, Condoleezza Rice can't speak at a commencement because people don't want her there. And heck, we had Pat Boone speak at a commencement a few years ago that people were upset about because they thought he was too conservative. This is not what America's about, and it's especially what higher education should not be about. We need to be open to different points of view, conservative and liberal, and then we let the students and their families work it out.
If you want to learn more, www.adrian.edu. When you came in 2005, you had 16 athletic teams. You mentioned lacrosse, hockey. Today you have 44. You have a crown jewel in Division III football stadiums.
Yes, we do.
And your football team has 180 men.
That's right. Crazy, isn't it?
How?
You know,
how many quarterbacks you got?
Yeah, who knows? There's probably a fifth or sixth or tenth string. I don't know for sure. But let me just say this about intercollegiate athletics. I think that if I was sitting in a room and asked parents, how many of you had children play athletics growing up, just about every one of their hands would go up. And if I said, how many thought that that was a bad thing, they would keep their hands down. Because I do believe that camaraderie, teamwork, the ability to come together to work for championships. You know, Americans are winners, Jack. And I think there's nothing wrong with learning how to win when you're in college. And so I say to, for example, the men on our campus, if you want to play in the football team, if you want to be a part of a group and learn how to be a young man by playing sports, I'm in favor of that. And I'll buy you a helmet and a pair of shoulder pads and an Adrian College logo on your chest or whatever you need to do that. So we don't cut, and if kids want to play, it's non-scholarship. Nobody gets athletic money at Adrian College. They got a spot on the team.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, and we're talking about Adrian College, founded in 1859. All right, 16 athletic teams when you got there in 2005, now 44 today. You mentioned lacrosse, soccer, synchronized skating, you got dance squads, but the most unique is bass fishing.
Varsity bass fishing, Jack. We have it, and I'll tell you, this is something that has really surprised me. My bass fishing coach told me a few weeks ago that he gets 40 to 50 emails a month from high school kids that say, how do I get on your bass fishing team? So, you know, you get surprised in this job. Obviously, these are tough jobs, they're complicated jobs, and you've got a lot of constituencies. But I had an ex-retired school teacher walk up to me a couple of years ago, and she had ripped a page out of Time magazine, and it said, bass fishing is taking off, and there's almost 500 intercollegiate teams in America. And she said, do you think this could work? And I said, let's give it a shot. And I bought two bass boats and a whole lot of reels and rods and line. And sure enough, I think as we speak here today, we're number one in the nation in bass fishing. So, hey, the kids love it. They bond around it. They know that they're there to get a college education. And they know that that's what's going to put food on the table, not the bass that they're catching. Heck, it's catch and release. They can't eat the fish anyway that they catch. But my point in bringing it up is that they want to do something for a few more years after getting out of high school. And so with all of our sports, whether it be hockey or synchronized skating or lacrosse, I say, what's wrong with that? So we've got 44 sports, and if I knew what sports to start, I'd start 44 more tomorrow, because I really believe in the value of athletics and molding young women and young men.
Speaking of athletics and molding young women and young men, talk to us about the student-athlete today and the life they have.
Yeah, well, people really need to make a distinction between the life of a student-athlete at the Division I and II level and then the Division III. And, Jack, you know, the big difference is we offer no athletic scholarships. Division I and Division II offer a lot of athletic scholarships. And I'm very involved with the NCAA, and so I get to see all of this take place in front of me. And what you get at Division III is the true student-athlete, because there is no reason to be on that football field in early November when the rain and the snow is pelting down on you in practice, except that you love the sport. And that is a special kind of kid, a special kind of perseverance that I think will really lead to them having great success in their life. And so it is student first. We have rules that every student, if they need to miss a class for a game or a practice, have to work it out with their professors. They're not automatically let out of class. If a professor says, nope, you got to be there, then they're there. So all of this is to say that it's what I would say a 360 well-rounded experience. It's student first. It's the most important thing that occurs every day on that campus is what happens in the four walls of the classroom with the teaching and learning experience. But then when they step out of class, they can do some really fun things that they're passionate about, and most of them are darn good at it. These athletes, I'll tell you, they are highly skilled. I think the best kept secret in America in higher education is Division III sports. These kids can play, and you'd be proud to watch them.
We've just started another school year. And I've often heard that the first semester at college is often the toughest. That's when most kids flunk out. What advice do you give to the first semester students, Doctor, and also their parents this evening?
So I tell them a number of things. In fact, that we have 702 moving in on Sunday, and so I'm going to have the chance to tell them all of this, Jack. The first thing that I tell them is, unlike high school, where they may have loaded up on their schedule early in their high school career, so when they got senioritis when they're leaving and weren't ready to study as hard as they were early on, to take a lighter load the first semester and understand all of the adjustments that you need to make. The second thing that I tell them at our school is to get to know a professor. You know, when you ask kids 25 years out of college if they had a great experience, if they say yes, the number one reason they identify yes is because they found a mentor early on, someone they could look up to, someone who they would sit in their office and say, where am I headed and what can you do to help me identify a career for me? The third thing that I tell them is that they're going to be in class very, very little compared to high school. But just because they're in class for a short amount of time doesn't mean they don't need to be studying. And so now it's on you, the student, to work hard, to do good things with your time, to make good decisions, and all of those other things that you can get involved with that are antithetical to getting good grades, you better watch out for. So I tell them that. The thing that I tell parents is we love to give our kids gifts, but there's something called the gift of disappointment, the gift of working it out for yourself, the gift of understanding that life doesn't always come easy. And so when they get that first test that they thought they were going to get an A on and they get a C, or things don't work out on the athletic field, to let the kid work it out before they jump in. I do think that the worry around snowflakes is real right now. And you hear about helicopter parents. I like to call them snowplow parents, where they like to get out in front of their kids and make everything okay. And that's not real life, and that's not the direction that parents and young people, in my opinion, should be going at the college level.
The partnership between Adrian College and this company called Google.
Yeah, so
You're making Google.
Yeah, right. I think Google is doing just fine without Adrian College. But yes, we did have Google on our campus. We broached an idea to Google a couple of years ago about working with us to offer computerized training, if you will, computer science. And so they did offer the first class last semester. We've got another class coming up. And even though I can't talk a lot about it because Google is still trying to decide exactly how far they want to go with this, this is really an opportunity for business and higher education to come together and to look at ways that we can offer new majors, academic training that not only is less expensive than how we're offering it right now at colleges and universities, but they get students work ready. business ready, industry ready. And, you know, if you ask CEOs, if the kids coming out of college are ready to jump in and to solve problems and to work as a team and to do all of the things they need, not too many of them say that they're ready. And so we really need to get together with business and to figure out how to do it together. And so Google has been on our campus for a semester, and we hope they'll be there for a while.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking. If you want to learn more, www.adrian.edu. You mentioned that a huge thing that attracted you to Adrian in 2005 was the professors.
Mm-hmm.
And that students 25 years later, you know, what do we remember? Well, I had this great professor. What do all great professors share in common?
Well, I would mention maybe three things. The first thing that I think they share in common is empathy. Empathy for the 18 to 22-year-old mindset. You know, if you can't reach the students, if you can't reach the audience, if you're either dumbing things down to the point where they're bored or you're over their head, it doesn't work. And so empathy is the first thing that I would mention. The second thing that I think they implant in students, if they're doing their job well, is a true lifelong curiosity, a love for learning, an understanding that it's never over, and that the pro, as my good friend Nito Quibane likes to say down at High Point University, never stops the teaching and learning process. And so that is very, very important. And then the third thing I would say that they need to get through to students is grit. It is the gritty person that takes the day. You know, students sometimes will ask themselves, what would I do if I won the lottery? And my question to them is, well, what are you going to do if you don't win the lottery? Because you're probably not going to win the lottery. And so that's when grit comes in. And so the idea of not getting grades handed to you, of persevering, of working hard, of understanding that this is a great country where you can do great things if you make wise decisions, all needs to come through the professors. And so patriotism and grit and hard work and determination and all of that comes out in the classroom. And so that's what I think professors are best at.
You touched on this earlier when we talked about your book, The Crisis in Higher Education. The fact is that the average university is raising tuition rates 3% per year. It's unsustainable. What do we do?
Well, it is unsustainable. And one of the things I like about private higher education is that because we don't get any money from the government, we really have to control our costs. And so the first thing we need to do is to understand that the money needs to go into the learning experience. And so controlling administrative bloat is the first thing. The second thing that I would say is that we have this absolutely wonderful, magical thing called the World Wide Web, the Internet, that allows us to really have a worldwide classroom and allows us to bring in incredible professors and teaching opportunities essentially free of charge, Jack. I mean, when you think about it. And so we need to get together as higher education professionals and to say, how can we leverage the Internet? Not so that kids are going up in their bedroom at night and, you know, learning, you know, in the same house they grew up in, but in a hybrid way where they've got some face-to-face with professors, they have some online, and then obviously they have the community of scholars that they live in, namely their peers and professors. And so, to me, that's where the future of higher education is, not to get professors out of the classroom, but to utilize the web much better than we are right now.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Jeff Docking, the president of Adrian College, and as such, he leads 1,800 Bulldogs.
That's right.
You've been there 13 years.
That's right.
Doctor, what's the biggest thing you've learned in those 13 years?
You know, Jack, the biggest thing I've learned is that a leader needs to reset the bar every day. I came in and rather naively thought that I could say, look, these are the standards, these are the expectations, this is where we need to be, and people would listen and jump on board. But, you know, in all honesty, the forces of mediocrity and just good enough are out there. And if a leader doesn't come in every day ready to hit the ground running like he's doing the 100-yard dash, then the bar begins to drop. And so if you came onto our campus now, I think, Jack, what you'd see are, you know, beautiful lawns and flowers, beautiful buildings, clean science laboratories, a brand new boathouse for students interested in rowing. But none of that just happens. It really is a group of people committed to jumping over a high bar, and I think it's the leader's role to set that bar every day. And it gets tiring. If you want to make a lot of friends, this is probably not the job to be in. But if you hopefully want to look back someday and say good things happened while I was there, then hopefully we'll be able to say that someday.
Dr. Docking, you teach a leadership course at Adrian, and you get guest speakers to come in. That's the easiest course to teach. You've had Tom Izzo. You've had Governor Snyder. What's the basic message of these guest speakers that you've had?
Yeah, I think the basic message, and you're right, we've had other college presidents come in, we've had politicians, certainly athletes, folks involved with the Kalamazoo Promise. The message that I've gotten from them, and there really is, Jack, it's a great question, because there really are a couple of threads that run through all of them. The first thread that I think is very surprising to students is that whereas you're a freshman when you head into high school and a freshman when you head into college, you're a freshman when you head into life after graduation. And don't think that just because you have a college degree that somebody's going to be waiting just as you step off the commencement stage with a $60,000 job. You have to go back to the beginning, and all the hard work and attributes that got you to that point need to start all over again. And so every one of these people talked about doing the job that nobody else wanted to do, of overperforming so that they could not be let go when layoffs came, of understanding that they needed to think before they spoke and to not just react out of emotion and to certainly not make any permanent decisions emotionally. And so all of the people that came in that talked to my class seem to have these common threads that I think the kids learned an awful lot. They were seeing practitioners. They were talking to people that had done it.
People admire you, Doctor, for a lot of reasons. One of the many is that you've maintained a select number of lifelong college friends. How has that helped you as president of Adrian College, and why have you done it?
Well, you know, besides family, friendship is the greatest thing that we have going, right? When I was at Michigan State, my career really got started as an RA in Wonders Hall, and I made some friends there. A few of them I think you might even know, John Lovasco, others. And we've all stood in each other's weddings, and I think the thing that I find most endearing to these young guys, or these guys, we're not young anymore, I should say, is that, you know, it's one of these things where you cannot see them for 5 years, for 10 years. It's like you never missed a beat. The other thing is a sense of genuineness. I think what people want in this life is just for people to be themselves, right? Be you. And so all of that combined with history, you can't replace history, has really sustained me in times when I'm down. And so when things get rough, I call my wife, I call my children, but I call my darn good friends.
Let's talk about the millennials, 18 to 35, 80 million of them. That's 25% of our population. Tell us about the millennials.
The millennials are a beautiful generation. I have great, great confidence and hope for this country, knowing that these young people are coming up, because I am optimistic. These are people that understand that they need to be ambitious, but they shouldn't wear it on their forehead. That humility is a very attractive feature. That appreciation is something that should be at the ground level of all of what we are. And that they need to overperform. Now, like I said, we have 42% first-generation students at Adrian College. And so these people come in without a lot of pretense. And these are parents who had, you know, a lot of them had mud on their boots or dirt under their fingernails. And they've said, I want something for my kids beyond what I had. And so these students come in ready to pay the price that they need to pay. And as long as they understand what the expectations are, they'll be fine. It's our generation that needs to not put them so in debt or to create a situation within this country that they can't even fix. And so if we leave it to them in a good way, they'll be fine.
Speaking of current students, they're the Gen Zers. What do the Gen Zers truly want and need?
Well, what they want is a job where they can buy a home and take care of their family and have a car and live a comfortable life. And that's not to say that's not important. There's nothing wrong with wanting that. But I think what they need is a foundation of values, of spirituality, of looking inside and understanding that, especially in the age of the internet, where one bad decision can be found in Google for the rest of your life, that this is real life and that you need to make decisions that really can be on the front page of the New York Times and not be embarrassed about. So our job as college leaders is to certainly give them the knowledge they need to be successful in their field, but to also give them an understanding of the values that will make them successful.
If there's a mom or dad listening tonight of a young child, and they say, Doc, what can I do or what can we do to give my child a love for learning?
You know, Jack, I think that the first thing I would tell them is to just know that I truly believe that education is the key to life. Education of self, education of society. And that if they can begin to be curious every single day, wondering, what can I do to get better? What can I do to make my community better? What can I do to make the place that I work better? And that curiosity is life-giving and energizing and gives them the opportunity to be excited to get up and go to work as I am, and I hope you are as well. Then the kids will be lifelong learners. But if it's a dead-end feeling, if it's a river of negativity that they want to jump into, it's not going to work.
As our time winds down together tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
I think the first thing that I would say is that happiness begins with passion. And passion begins with understanding what you love and what you can be good at. I may love golf, Jack, but I'm no good at it. And so I need to be honest with myself about that. But they also need to understand that there are certain benchmarks to understanding passion, one of which is that when you're doing something that you're passionate about, the time just seems to fly. It's almost like you just don't have enough hours in the day. And so it's hard to almost imagine when you're 18, 19 years old that you can get up and love to go to work every day, can't wait for Monday to come around so that you can make your contribution to the world. But I know that can happen because I've had that at Adrian College, and I've seen it in others. And so spend time during your college years understanding yourself so that when you're working for 30, 40, maybe 50 years, who knows, that you just can't wait to tackle another day.
Dr. Ducking, there's a saying, don't tell me how much you know till you show me how much you care. And sir, you're a master at that. So keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you, Jack. And thanks for having me on. I very much appreciate it. And you're right. I do care about these kids. It really begins with that.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahn.
Believe in yourself.